We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now, hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, the weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your networking community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey, everybody. Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also find me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Chris Thierry. With a passion for problem solving and a quest for continuous improvement, Christine works with business brands, communities, and individuals to create transformations never before imagined. As the only certified brand strategist in New England, Christine is driven to discover her clients' unique position to help them put their stake in the ground and align their business, brand, and marketing strategies. Among the many creative awards bestowed upon her agency, Chris has been named Business Person of the Year by her local Chamber of Commerce and Outstanding Woman in Business by their Worcester Business Journal. Chris is a sought-after speaker on brand, integrated marketing, and ideation. She's the author of BrandStanza.com, Little Ditties that build big brands. Interesting. All right. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Lori, for having me on. I'm excited to catch up with you and talk further about, and congratulations on your podcast. I've been listening to the episodes and they're so much fun.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoy them. I'm excited to chat with you because I love branding and I've been putting a lot of time and energy into personal branding, but I know you take it like much bigger than that.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I also, I will take the sort of tenets of brand and have run personal brand workshops. I'm actually starting one up soon. And I know we weren't exactly scheduled to talk about that, but it is a pretty fun and it is connected. You know, it's all about putting your stake in the ground and being true to who you are.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about what a certified brand strategist is and how does it benefit a client company overall?
Sure. So I became a certified brand strategist probably 5 years ago. And the Brand Establishment, which is an outfit out of California, is the one doing the certifications. There's about 40 of us across the country and in Canada as well. And we, it's a really rigorous program that we go through for about 6 months. It's a little bit like grad school for branding. And at the end, we come out with a certification and we have to follow up with 2 times a year we meet and do continuous learning events. So what this does is it helps position small to mid-size agencies and their smaller to mid-size clients compete on a larger scale by following some of the work and the process that bigger brands do. But really, we hone in on how we can help a smaller size client who's not a Coke or a Pepsi who can afford big brand companies, how we can utilize some of the same best practices and bring them to our clients. So I think that's sort of the benefit is the big picture thinking, the total brand strategy and practices, but brought in a more palatable way to a smaller to mid-sized business.
And that makes sense because really every business needs some branding direction and not every business can afford the big shops in town.
That's right. That's right.
So what things should companies look for or do when they're focusing on building a strong brand?
So I like to think that in how I measure and build brands is really looking at management's vision for the future, you know, certainly where you are now, but what's the longer term vision, 5 years out, 8 years out, and wanting to make sure that the brand is big and bold enough to encompass the future. Also, we look at the internal culture and we want to know if the internal culture is in alignment with the management's vision. You know, it's one thing to say we're this and that, and the other thing for your people to be delivering a whole different experience. And then lastly, we look at the audience and what their motivation and desires are and what problem the brand is solving. And all of those three things need to come together. And what I like to say is they have to be defendable, deliverable, and desirable. So defendable, your claim of distinction, your stake in the ground needs to be defendable in the marketplace. Whatever you say or do needs to be better than anybody else out there. So that's, you know, you're claiming it, you've got to own it. And then the deliverable part is your people. And how are they delivering that brand experience day in and day out on a very consistent basis, whether it's over the phone or in person or in the products and services they are developing and selling? Really want to make sure that aligns with the rest of the brand. And then finally, is it desirable by the audience? And with that, it seems a little obvious. Sure, we want to be desirable to the audience. But sometimes brands, you know, especially old brands, like we had an insurance company once, who they thought their claim of distinction was that they had been around since the 1850s. And we said, okay, that might be defendable. And it might even be how your people deliver it, kind of in an old fashioned way. But it's not, we did some research, it's not really desirable by the client. In fact, they just want to know what can you do for me today? It might be nice to know that they've had some longevity, but really 1850, like, do they need that much longevity? So that wasn't a real desirable point for the audience. And we had to talk to them about shifting their brand message.
Oh, I love that. I love the defendable, deliverable, desirable format. I've not heard that before, and it totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's a great platform to really base everything on, and even just test, you know, like you're saying, is it defendable? Is it deliverable? And how is it deliverable? But most importantly, does the audience want it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Really good. Nice.
Thank you.
Speaking of that deliverable component and people in general, what are ways for employees to get on board with the brand story?
So that is, you know, that's a great question, because we like to talk about taking employees from understanding there's even a brand, because oftentimes they don't even, you know, they know they've got the brand of jeans on or sneakers, or they understand brand in that way, but they might not be so in tune if they work at a manufacturing company or even financial, even colleges. Really, everybody has a brand. So it's taking the employees from understanding even what a brand is to believing in the brand and really getting on board. But the ultimate place we want to take them is to becoming the brand, where they really live and breathe it. And you think of companies like Zappos or Nordstrom, and where the employees really deliver on that brand promise on a consistent basis. And those are people who really live and breathe that brand. You even see them out at a family picnic or this and that, and they're exuding the tenets of that brand, and they could tell you all about it. That's really where we want to get to with internal audiences.
Yeah, absolutely. You want people to be, one, proud that that's where they're working, right? Mm. And living it and breathing it every single day. And that's not an easy thing to do, is it?
No. It starts with communication, but it can't just be words. It has to be actions from, you know, the top down. It has to be how your office is set up, what your culture is like. I think it's really important even to get HR involved in helping bring the brand to life and having it be part of an onboarding, you know, process, and even retention. And, when you have reviews, it doesn't have to be your whole review, but it should be a portion or at least a couple questions about how well the person is living the brand.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense, actually. And that's a question that I've asked my team, you know, what have you done recently to prove that you're living the brand, mm-hmm. you know, and it's an interesting question, and it really makes them reflect on, you know, am I doing this, and is this the right fit for me or not, or what do you mean by that? I often get, what do you mean by that? Like, well, then I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah, right. A little window into, you know, maybe, you know, a little more communications. I was actually just listening to a podcast last night, and they were talking about starting off every sort of internal meeting with like a vision statement. And for me, it would be more of the brand statement, but it was kind of a good idea, even just like a 1 or 2 minute story on something they witnessed that week that showed somebody living the brand or showing the brand coming to life. And that gives people sort of stories to hang on to and things to emulate. So I thought that was a really good idea.
Well, that is a good idea. I'm writing that down as a note for myself. we do in our weekly Monday morning production meetings, we do what is a win that we had. And I guess that can kind of, you know, what are something we can celebrate together as a team. So that kind of, I think this is taking it to the next level, what you're recommending here.
Yeah. I mean, you could do kind of both, like what's a win and then what's a good example of something where our brand shined through, you know?
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, branding obviously plays a part in the networking space. So let's move the conversation that direction. My goal is to really remove the fear associated with the word networking. So can you share with our listeners your most successful or favorite networking story that you've had?
So it's funny. We were just actually before we started recording, we were talking about BOLO, the digital conference that is no longer, sadly, but that's actually where I think we've met and have hung out before. And the first BOLO I ever went to, I went to a presentation given by Susan Beyer of Audience Audit, who many of possibly your listeners know, at least in the agency world.
Yep.
And I was so intrigued by this different type of research that she was doing. It was all attitudinal based and forget the demographics. And not that demographics don't matter, but somebody might look exactly the same on paper, but their attitudes and motivations are so different and they purchase things for different reasons. And it just really was so interesting to me. In fact, that's part of our adding that audience desires and motivations to our testing of the brands is because of the work we do with Susan. And if any of our clients can have the time and can afford the investment to do an audience audit, we always will do one. But back to BOLO, I sat in this this presentation and I was so intrigued. And then at lunch there, lo and behold, there was Susan and there was an open seat at her table. So I slid right in and talked to her about her presentation. And then lo and behold, at the bar later on, I happened to run into her again. And it seemed like we kept crossing paths. Maybe I was stalking her. I don't know. But we became fast friends. And not only have we been using audience audit research in our work for a number of years, probably 7 or 8 years, but Susan has become a close friend and has even come up she was come up to New England on different occasions. In fact, last year her child was looking at colleges in New England and they stayed with us for a couple of days.
Yeah,
so we really, this networking, you know, kind of turned into a friendship, a professional partnership, collaborator, and to this day, you know, really enjoy a great relationship and a relationship with her friends and also, you know, my colleagues and that sort of thing. So.
Yeah. What I love about this story, and thank you very much for sharing it with us, is that you went to basically a conference for educational purposes and you walked away with a huge resource that you could offer to your clients and a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great.
It is. Yeah. And I did not know one person when I went to that first BOLO.
Ooh, that's so scary. Isn't it?
It was totally scary. Right. Right.
Okay, so I know that you travel a lot for business and you're doing a ton of speaking engagements. What do you do to stay in front of or nurture your network?
You know, it's kind of like you can break it into two sections, sort of online and offline, which is really how I guess you do it. So the offline stuff is easy. I really like interacting with people in person. So I'm on a number of boards. I attend a lot of events, whether they're local chamber events or I was at a women's summit. As you said, I do a lot of speaking, which helps me to meet a whole bunch of new people. Mm-hmm. But I love going to events, conferences, even, you know, far away, nearby. And I really, I find in that atmosphere, you can meet a lot of different people and as well as meet up with people who you've met with before and continue to nurture those relationships. From a online standpoint, definitely social media, and you can't sort of do it all, but Facebook and LinkedIn are probably the biggest ones for me, along with I'll do Twitter when it's conference time and I'm trying to find out if somebody I know is at the conference and that sort of thing. So I think, you know, I try to keep in touch with people on LinkedIn and send, you know, different articles. If I find of interest, I'll private message somebody and just trying to be that friend and helpful resource. You know, obviously you could spend probably all day doing it and still not be, done. But I think even just a little bit goes a long way.
So it's just taking the time to post some content on the social networks and then really seeking out, like you said, use Twitter at conference time to see, is there someone here that I know that I could touch base with?
Right.
Nice. Okay, good. So what advice would you offer the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
I would say definitely participate in either some boards or at least some committees if they're a little concerned about time commitment, or even if they're like just kind of worried if they want to dip their toe in the water, sign up for a committee, you know, through a board so you can sort of see what it's like, how it's run, attend their events. And if it's not working, try another one. You don't, no need to stay too long with something that's not working for you. I also think that LinkedIn is the place to be. And I also think that the more we all do LinkedIn, the better resource it'll be to everybody. So, and it is the place to be for business. So I think it's in all of our best interest to use LinkedIn as a connector. It really is the digital Rolodex.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think what's important is to keep it that business space. Cause I do see some people trying to make it a Facebook, you know, and posting some weird, just more social activities, which, you know, Facebook is the place for that.
Right.
But it's definitely a really good resource to connect and find those experts and this, you know, the people that you're looking to connect with.
Well, and what's interesting about LinkedIn too is, you know, you have your first sort of circle of friends and then your second and your third. So there's always somebody out there who could introduce you to somebody. They have InMail that you can buy into where you can, try to target certain people that you want to meet. It's a friendly platform for networking. It doesn't make you sort of feel bad about networking. It's what it's there for.
Yep. Absolutely. So you've talked a lot about the digital space, Facebook and LinkedIn, maybe some Twitter, and you've also addressed that the in-person, the conferences, and the speaking engagements. Which one do you ultimately find more value in, digital or traditional?
I'm a traditional person. It could just be my age, but I really, really enjoy sitting across the table from somebody and having a one-on-one conversation or a small group conversation. I love getting to know people that way. You know, digital is the shortcut to me. And you can't always be face-to-face. I mean, let's face it, using Susan as my example, she lives in Arizona. I live in Massachusetts. We can't get face-to-face. So digital has to be it. And that provides something that didn't exist years ago, you know, except for through a phone call once in a while. So I think, you know, I can't bash digital, but I do love the face-to-face when I can get it.
It's interesting. I've not heard it referred to as the shortcut before.
So I think I just made it up.
Digital shortcut. But it also extends the reach so much further.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
So you can do business overseas so easily, and video conferencing and everything else just makes it so much easier to connect with individuals.
It's true. And you know what? That outweighs by far the fact that it is the next best thing to being in person, because really, if you can reach somebody who you never would have reached, that's far more important than the fact that you're not sitting right next to them. I think it is a little bit my more traditional upbringing where in business. And it's so funny because I'm actually starting my own podcast coming soon. I'm not going to give you a date because I'm not sure yet, but it's going to be called Three Martini Lunch. And it's going to talk about how we used to do business in person over sometimes three martinis at lunch and how in today's world, there's so much that's changed. The people don't take the time to even do that anymore, not to mention it's frowned upon. But so many business practices have gone by the wayside because of the digital transformation. And, you know, how are businesses getting by and how are they doing this in a new way? And like you said, you know, video conferencing and Skype and all of these things really are filling in, and they're not doing a terrible job of it.
Yeah. Well, and it's increased the speed of business is really what it's done. No one has time to have that long, you know, 2-hour lunch anymore because, you know, now it's like, okay, I can squeeze in a lunch in 15 minutes here between these other activities. It's a very rare time where I'm actually sitting down and having a 2-hour lunch.
Yeah, right. Never mind tossing back a few while you're at it.
Well, then the entire afternoon would not be very productive, I imagine.
Might be creative, though. It could be creative.
This is true. Although, an interesting conversation I had with someone not too long ago, and actually it was a recent podcast guest, was about how marketing has really shifted from being creative to very analytical, you know, and that where maybe the three martinis were very acceptable in the creative space, where now, I mean, you need your brain to really be functioning to dive into the analytics, right?
Absolutely. And I agree with you 100%. I used to say that advertising was a little art, a little science, and it definitely, the pendulum has swung over to the science end of things and the numbers and the analytics. And sadly, having come up through the creative side, I feel like we've lost a little bit of the human connection, the messaging, the emotional pull. And I'm hoping that we're going to swing back a little bit and be more balanced, moving forward.
I agree with that. I think it is slowly on that swing. I mean, it was big data for the longest time, right? Was the big word in the agency space. And now it is coming back to that emotional state and, you know, what connects and what is the message that resonates with your audience. So it is kind of merging together again, but definitely heavier on the analytical side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's a fun question. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
I would tell myself a lot of things.
No three martini lunches?
Yeah, I was going to say lay off the martinis. So I think, you know, I wish I had sort of a better organized process of keeping my network in check. I think it's maybe easier now with social media where you can connect with somebody and then you sort of keep them in that digital Rolodex, where I feel as I would, we didn't have that digital Rolodex when I was in my 20s. And so you were doing a lot of paper keeping and dropping people notes and you didn't always have their email and you couldn't find them online. And, you know, so I don't know if it would be so applicable today, but I do think there's a part of keeping organized it and actually spending some time on your network. Even if it's like one time a week, just cleaning up emails or getting back to people or remembering a birthday. But I think it's worth sort of setting up a system where you can have a little bit more of a personal touch with your network.
Yeah, that's really something I think anyone can value regardless of where they are, if they're just starting out or have been in the business space for quite some time. But creating a system is really where those efficiencies come into play.
And I think it helps you create a habit around doing that. You know, Mondays are my, you know, touch base afternoons or whatever it is. It just becomes a regular part of your, you know, your day or your schedule.
Yeah, that's important. And then you just do it without even thinking about it.
Right, right. It's easier for me to tell my 20-year-old self than it is to actually, you know, for my 50-year-old self to actually do it is a whole different story too.
Well, in 20 years, I'll come back and ask you, what would you tell your 50-year-old self to do differently?
Retire early, I think I would say.
So we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Now, who'd be the one person you'd love to connect with, and do you think you could do it within the sixth degree?
I would have to say Seth Godin. I'm a huge Seth Godin fan. Are you? Do you read any of his stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's got some good information out there.
I just absorb all he's – sometimes I think he's hiding in my office and just knows what to say at the right time. you know, whether it's a blog post or a book that he comes out with, it just always seems to answer a problem that's been in my mind. But I would love to just meet him and pick his brain. You know, and I think there's ways to do it too. He's got some programs that where he's kind of hands-on. So it's just a matter of carving out the time and my, you know, a little courage to sign up for one. I think that, I think definitely could do it within the 6 degrees, being that he's a marketing person. I mean, part of what he talks about is marketing. I think I probably have some connection who is connected with him, whether it's one or two or three people deep. I'm pretty sure I could connect with him. I don't know if I could meet him, but so.
I'm sure you could. Like you said something like, you know, get a little courage there, I think. Maybe you have to have those martinis.
And then yeah, that's right. Just slur my words. Hey, Seth. What up, boy?
Well, maybe he likes martinis and you can have a martini together.
That's right. That's good.
Okay. Good. Well, I challenge you to make that happen, or at least sign up for one of his programs, maybe, and then you can, you know, say that you had the conversation with him or something.
Right. Well, I have. You know, it's funny because I've seen him speak a number of times in all size venues, like at HubSpot, where there's, you know, 20,000 people. I mean, inbound rather, and then at a small venue in New York City where there was maybe 60 people, and a couple in between, and he really knows how to engage with his audience. Even and certainly you need to know who your audience is, but really at those different sizes, from, you know, tens of thousands of people down to 60 people, and making an impact like that, I am just really amazed by that. So, you know, definitely maybe I can get down to a smaller size, even where I could like raise my hand
and actually get called on.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Again, the courage or the martini, either or.
Or both. Liquid courage.
That's right.
All right. So as an entrepreneur, I know that you are constantly reading. I mean, you're going to conferences and workshops all the time and learning new things. So reading is just kind of a natural, you know, addition to that. I'm always interested in what book my guests are reading right now.
I tend to read a few books at a time, but right now I am in the middle of Radical Candor, which is by Kim Scott, and a sort of the subtitle is Be a Kick-Ass Boss Without Losing Your Humanity. And it's actually a scary book. So I've put it down a couple of times it challenges you to do things in a different way than maybe you've been doing them. And it really challenges you to be direct and not beat around the bush and not give somebody sort of a half a suggestion and hope they pick up on your read between the lines kind of thing. So maybe it's just me, my style, that makes it scary, but it's really interesting.
Sounds like one I need to read.
Yeah. It's funny. So after each chapter, I have taken something away immediately where the next day something pops up and I'm like, I should just try this. You know, one was I had a breakup with a vendor, unfortunately, and super nice guy. I just wasn't getting what I needed out of our relationship. And I was going on and on, like month after month, and, you know, kind of wasting some money and also, you know, not being fully engaged with what he thought he was offering. And I just said at one point, I was just like, I am so, so sorry, but this isn't working for me. And it was so unusual. And I told him why, because I wanted him to sort of at least get my perspective in case, you know, it might help him with another client. And he was so understanding, and he was actually thankful that we, you know, to move on and separate and not waste each other's time, but to really get the feedback. So he was totally gracious. And to think that I kind of dragged things out for 6 months and I was always like, oh my God, I got to take this phone call. And I really should have just been straightforward from the beginning, you know, rather than worrying about hurting somebody's feelings. So
yeah,
that was one that really sticks out. That was a big action item for me after that chapter.
Well, cool. It's always nice to have takeaways immediately when you're reading something and it encourages you to keep on reading it, right?
Right.
There's so many books I start reading and I'm like, oh, this is dry and I'm not getting anything out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
Well, I think being easily found is key. And, you know, whether it's having, you don't need your own website, but I think having sort of a presence again on LinkedIn and Facebook and those places where people live, you know, if you're out there, people can find you pretty easily with just a Google search. So I think that's sort of an easy step. I also think, and we're just talking about data 2 seconds ago, but growing in, I think you need to know a certain amount about data in how to organize it. So if you have email addresses, you may not. So for instance, after a speaking event, I always collect email addresses for anybody who might want to stay connected with me, get the newsletter from the agency, or, you know, come to a future event, and they'll give me their emails. And unless I catalog them under the certain event that I met them, I quickly forget who I met where. And this is, I think I could do a better job, but also would recommend to anybody else to figure out the structure of how you're going to segment your data so that when you do reach out and you do need your network for something, you know who you're talking to. So, you know, it's going to be different for everybody, whether they categorize it by event or by relationship or by client industry or who knows what's right for you. But I think giving it a big picture view and knowing that at some point you're going to want to reach out and it might be in different ways. So how can you sort of segment the people into those lists?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great idea. I think it's really important, especially if you're heavy into the networking scene and attending a lot of events where you're meeting a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You need to keep those contacts organized.
Right.
Chris, if anyone is interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way they can reach you?
Again, on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, if you just do at Chris Thierry, one word, I will show up. And on both LinkedIn and Twitter specifically, you can private message me and we can hook up and would love to chat with anybody in your audience who feels like chatting and networking.
Cool. All right. And we will include those links in the show notes.
Super. Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun. And again, it's a great time for us to catch up.
Yeah, no, I very much enjoyed the conversation. Thanks. Thanks so much for taking the time and being on the show today.
Excellent.
This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Chris for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.